shines. There's a light that shines in me. There's a light in me.
Once again, and happy end of summer days, so happy every day. My name is Rodney Gittins, and I am your host here at One Love Center Presents The Power of Now, book study of Eckhart Tolle's The Power of Now. I welcome you once again. We've had a few weeks layoff, and we're back. And we are back with more of the one love that you know and love. So, again, I welcome you, and we are going to get back into the power of now. But before we do, I just do want to say that, yes, my name is Rodney Gittins. I am the host. We look forward to having our co-host, the Reverend Hajar Rahim, join us. And I'm also open to anybody else who chooses to participate. All are welcome. This is a presentation of the One Love Center. We are a teaching chapter. We are an established community, a part of the Centers for Spiritual Living, which is a global community, which is centered in Golden, Colorado. That is our home base, so to speak, that is our home office, and it is a dynamic community with centers and churches and teaching chapters and spiritual circles, study groups around the world. And we, One Love Center, is centered here in Brooklyn, New York. As far as I know, we are the first and the only teaching chapter and church in Brooklyn, New York. So I'm so very grateful and thankful and happy to be here. I know that each and every one who has ever participated in anything that Centers for Spiritual Living has done has indeed contributed to the blessing that each one of us is sharing right here, right now, listening to my voice. I give thanks for Ernest Holmes, the founder of Religious Science, Science of Mind and Spirit, in a way that has contributed to my becoming a spiritual practitioner, a licensed practitioner of truth, to my partner, my co-host, Hajra Rahim. And we share the pulpit at One Love Center. We meet the first and third Sunday of the month, of every month. I will be actually presenting and speaking the next coming Sunday, the 21st of September. And I look forward to each and every one of you listeners being there. It's 11 o'clock, 886 Pacific Street in Brooklyn, New York. And I will share that information again at a later time. But I do want to bless each and every one for being here, all of the mentors and supporters and contributors and listeners and speakers and everything that has occurred up until this moment. I know that the blessings are flowing forth. I want to give big thanks to Eckhart Tolle for being who he is, another wonderful spiritual being on this path, and his contribution in the power of now, being open and available to be the vessel for the power of now to be placed on the planet in such a way. And we are answering a call in reviewing the power of now. It's been out for a while. It's been out for quite a number of years. And I think it's still a powerful message to be shared in the world. It's originally copyrighted in 1999. So as you can see, it's already almost 14 years old, going on 15 years. However, the message is still fresh, that there is power in the now. There's a power of now. And it's just not now. It's every now moment, yes. But it's our particular perception of now. So just to paraphrase him, or actually just read some of what he says this book is about. He says, we have to come to understand our role as the creator of our pain. Our own mind causes our problem, not other people, not the world out there. It is our mind, with its nearly constant stream of thoughts, thinking about the past, worrying about the future. We make the great mistake of identifying with our mind, thinking that's who we are, when, in fact, we are far greater beings. Over and over, Eckhart Tolle shows us how to connect with what he calls our being. And I'll read again. It says, being is an eternal, ever-present, one life beyond the myriad forms of life that are subject to birth and death. It says, don't seek to grasp it with your mind. Don't try to understand it. You can know it only when the mind is still, when you are present fully and intensely in the now. To regain awareness of being and to abide in the state of feeling realization is enlightenment. And so that's what it's about. He goes on to say, and actually this is the preface that I'm reading from by Mark Allen, He says the power of now is nearly impossible to read straight through. It is a complete guide, a complete course in meditation and realization. And so I think the most important aspect of this, and I think many of our spiritual books, spiritually minded books or spiritually heart books, is it's not a novel. It can't be just read straight through, you put it down and you've got it. It's good entertainment. There's a lot to be gotten from reading it over and over. And like many books, I'm sure many of you know, you can pick up a book and just open it to any page and start reading. And you will find right there, I think, what you need in the moment. However, what we've done with the power of now is we've gone straight through from chapter 1 all the way up to where we are today in chapter 9. Now, you could go into our archives and catch up that way. And we have spent a good fair amount of time on each chapter. We don't rush through. What we'd like to do is kind of ingest it, digest it, so that if it does get regurgitated, it could make sense. And not only that, have use. And so if you think of maybe a bird eating a meal and regurgitating it for its young ones, what it has taken in for itself and what comes up is able to serve another. And so that's what we're doing for ourselves and each other. We're bringing it in, we're swirling it around, and we're getting the good from it. We're finding the good that not only we can use for ourselves, but that we can share. Now, in our reading of The Power of Now, we have found that there were some issues that came up for us individually and even collectively as we communicated with each other in this book study. Now, and that is to say, and I think any spiritual teacher, any author, or maybe I should say many authors, would say, hey, you don't have to agree with me. Check it out for yourself. Try it out for yourself. See if it works. See how it fits. Now, I do want to add, really try it on. Don't just put the shoes on just to see if it's a snug fit. You have to walk in it. You have to walk in them. You know, you put the shoes on and sometimes we're in the store and you just want to walk up and down the aisle and, okay, yeah, that's good, looks good. This is more than that. When you're dealing with your life, your enlightenment, with your opportunity to be free from pain, give it more of an opportunity. Try it on. Walk around in it for 30 days. You know, it's like a money-back guarantee, except it's a life-back guarantee. You can have a life that is really worth living if you try it on and see how it fits, and just maybe it will fit perfectly for you. Now, there are sometimes you wear shoes and you get them home and you don't wear them right away, and next thing you know, you've bought them. You can't take them back. It's too late. You've already worn out the bottom a little bit. But guess what? Sometimes you get a shoe stretcher. And I think sometimes we need to stretch ourselves. Like, let's stretch ourselves beyond what we already think we know, about the stretch ourselves with more than the life we already live. Let's give ourselves every opportunity to fit into new ideas or maybe old ideas that we never really tried before. And the only reason that we're going to do that is to free ourselves up from some pain and quite possibly free ourselves up in such a way that we do not invite the pain again. Now, that's freedom. That's freedom, and I love to quote a wonderful spiritual guru from the music side of town, George Clinton. He says freedom is being free from the need to be free. Now, to me, that's freedom. When you no longer feel that you need to be free, now that's freedom. Now, when you no longer think you need to be free, that's freedom. Now, just imagine if you're not feeling free, then most likely you don't need to listen. You don't need to participate in anything that is evolutionary, that is enlightening, that is freeing. I don't mean just me or your church or your pastor or minister or reverend or any, like, Oprah or any of her guests. We watch, we listen, because there's something within us that calls for us to be free on a deeper level, on a higher level. Every little bit helps. And I think when it gets to this level, there is no large or little. Everything participates, everything contributes to our greater good, to our sense of greater freedom. We're breaking the chains that can bind us. And usually, as it said in the preface, it is our own mind with its nearly constant stream of thoughts, thinking about the past, worrying about the future. That creates the problems and the pain in our lives. It's up to us. You know, and I think that we have every opportunity to allow ourselves the pleasure of being free from pain. And I'm sure you can all remember and imagine, and maybe you're going through it now, moments of stillness where you don't even realize that you're not in pain in that moment. Have you had that feeling? Have you experienced that? You weren't thinking about it. You weren't thinking about, oh, woe is me, my toe hurts, my foot hurts, my ankle, my knee, my back, whatever, my head, my feelings. Just for a moment, it was like, just cruise control. Like you're coasting in the eye of the storm where it's all peaceful. You didn't even realize that you had gotten there. All you know is that you're there. And it lasts for a good while. And before you know it, the storm is up again. And actually, the storm has been there. We've just steered back into it. Maybe we could have stayed in the eye, because there's going to be an eye somewhere. But we steered away from the stillness back into the storm. And guess what? We've got to weather the storm again to get back to the stillness, get to where the storm breaks. And then we're at peace. So, yes, it's up to us. We are the captain of our ship, and we are the vessel. So, the power of now. We're going to just briefly touch on each chapter. And if you've read The Power of Now recently, and I have friends who I tell them, oh, yes, we're doing a book study on The Power of Now. And most people light up and like, oh, I love that book. You know, I didn't finish it. Oh, I love that book, and I finished it. I was thinking about reading it again. But a lot of people don't necessarily want to jump back into it because it's work. It's not necessarily just pleasure reading. It's inner work. It's introspective. Now, even though we are our favorite topic, I mean, I think most people like, whether outwardly or inwardly or secretly, they like to be talked about, to be the subject of a conversation. Oh, were you talking about me, about moi? And we try to play it off and be humble. But there's something within us that says, they're talking about me. And that me usually is the ego. It's usually the ego mind that likes to run the show, that likes to be known, that likes to be appreciated, that likes to be talked to or about or with. So Eckhart Tolle says, you in chapter one, you are not your mind. You are not your mind. And so he goes on talking about what is mind, what is the word being, and how do you free yourself from your mind? He says the good news is that you can free yourself from your mind. This is the only true liberation. He says pay particular attention to any repetitive thought patterns. Start listening to the voice in your head as often as you can. And when you listen to that voice, listen to it impartially. That is to say, do not judge. Do not judge or condemn what you hear. For doing so would mean that the same voice has come in again through the back door. You'll soon realize there is the voice. And here, I am listening to it, watching it. That is the I am realization, the sense of your own presence. He says, many people live with a tormentor in their head that continuously attacks and punishes them and drains them of vital energy. It is the cause of untold misery and unhappiness as well as disease. He says, go into the realm of no mind, as it is sometimes called in the East. Be the watcher. Just become intensely conscious of the present moment. Be totally present. Do it when you wash your hands. I say when you wash your dishes. Just be noticeable of everything. But it's just a sense of presence, and this is what he's talking about. He says, don't take the content of your mind seriously. Your sense of self does not depend on it. He says, sometimes we are addicted to thinking. Compulsive thinking is an addiction, he says. So you no longer feel that you have the choice to stop. That's an addiction. Sometimes that comes up for us. Sometimes we just are habitually thinking, like you can't stop. Have you experienced that? Where you say to yourself, oh my gosh, I need a break. I just need some stillness right now. Can I just shut this off? And unfortunately, that's what happens to a lot of addicts and drug addicts and alcoholics, and people will do anything to get outside of themselves, to think about anything outside of their own thoughts. Because most of the time, we don't like what we're thinking about ourselves anyway. Many times, it's self-depreciating jabber going on in the mind. Oh, that's not for me. Oh, that's no good. Oh, that. And it's on and on and on. It's negative talk. And until we can learn to have repetitive, positive talk, then we shouldn't think at all. You know, just do your best to shut it out. Shut it off. Now, we know that that's pretty close to impossible. So what do? Eckhart Tolle says we just be still and be in the present moment. So do not identify yourself as your mind. You are not your mind. You think, but that doesn't mean that you are that which you are thinking. And so he does call this the ego. He says the term ego can mean different things to different people, but the way he uses it, he says it is a false self created by unconscious identification with the mind. To the ego, the present moment hardly exists. Only past and future are considered important to the ego. It is always concerned with keeping the past alive, because without it, who are you? We have an identification with the past that determines that we determine, and we allow other people to determine that this is who we are. He says it continually projects itself into the future to ensure its continued survival and to seek some kind of release or fulfillment there. It reminds me of, and I say it a lot, when you're driving on roads that just seem to be perpetually broken down, when it gets fixed, it's patched up, it's glossed over. Less than a year, the road is just torn up again. They call it job security. I say the ego has job security. It's a self-perpetuating illness in a way that continues to have a broken down road to patch up for you. So here you go, feeling a little bit broken down, yet you do a little patchwork here and there by the ego, and you think you're good for a little while, but the ego continues to have a job to do. That's that identification with the mind. And so the ego focusing on the future will create opportunities for it to shine and therefore survive and therefore have a job to do. So I'm reading from The Power of Now, actually on page 18 in the first chapter. And I see we do have another listener who has come aboard. Welcome. I'm glad you could be here. And so moving forward, he says, thinking and consciousness are not synonymous. Thinking is only a small aspect of consciousness. Thought cannot exist without consciousness, but consciousness does not need thought. So if you think about that for just a moment, give it some thought, that consciousness doesn't need thought. You don't have to think about anything to be conscious. But thought needs consciousness, because we exist in the one mind consciousness, the one mind of all that is. But our thoughts are limited because they happen on a human level. But consciousness is so much greater than that. He says, when you do use your mind, and particularly when a creative solution is needed, you oscillate every few moments or so between thought and stillness, between mind and no mind. No mind is consciousness without thought. He says, thought alone... Well, actually, he says, only in that way is it possible to think creatively without thought. Because only in that way does thought have any real power. Thought alone, when it is no longer connected with a much vaster realm of consciousness, quickly becomes barren, insane, and destructive. I just want to say a quick hello. So hello, listener, and thank you for joining us. Now, he said the mind is essentially a survival machine, attack and defense against other minds, gathering, storing, analyzing information. That is what it's good at, but it's not all that creative. And so, therefore, we need to be careful. Just because we think, that doesn't mean that we're being creative. So we're going to move on. And a big section is called past pain, dissolving the pain body. This is chapter 2, page 29. He says, as long as you are unable to access the power of the now, every emotional pain that you experience leaves behind a residue of pain that lives on in you. Ooh, that doesn't sound like fun. It lives on in you. He says the accumulated pain is a negative energy field that occupies your body and mind. So he says the pain body wants to survive, just like every other entity in existence, and it can only survive if it gets you to unconsciously identify with it. It needs to get its food through you. This is page 30, chapter 2. It will feed on any experience that resonates with its own kind of energy. Anything that creates further pain in whatever form, anger, destructiveness, hatred, grief, emotional drama, violence, even illness. So the pain body, when it has taken over you, will create a situation in your life that reflects back its own energy frequency for it to feed on. Pain can only feed on pain. Pain cannot feed on joy. It finds it quite indigestible. It reminds me of a saying that I hear people say every now and then, that hurt people hurt people. That people who are feeling hurt can't help but hurt other people. It's like self-perpetuating. It creates a vicious cycle of hurt and pain, because somebody who's living in a world of pain can't really do much else but dish out pain, because that's their experience. That's where they are. And unfortunately, there are receptors for that. There are people who are unfortunately willing to accept that pain from somebody else because their own pain body experience recognizes it. The more the merrier. Except it's not so merry. Except it might seem merry. Sometimes it's so habitual that that pain is familiar. It's a familiar pain. It reminds me of a song that Stevie Wonder had, an ordinary pain. It's just there. It's ordinary. It's regular. And what do you do? It's so familiar that sometimes you have to keep it up, because that's more familiar than not being in pain. It's more familiar than the stillness. Sometimes there are people who talk nonstop all day till their head hits the pillow, and I wouldn't be surprised if they talk in their sleep. You know, can you imagine? That they're still not through. And all of that is the pain body experience. All of that is the ego mind that wants to be so important. It's self-important. And it's not going to allow for one still moment of pure consciousness to take hold. There are people who are very uncomfortable with a still mind. They miss it. They miss the noise. Do you know anybody like that? They just talk and talk, sometimes just to hear themselves talk. Because any moment of silence, they have to start dealing with their perception, their thoughts, their beliefs about who they believe themselves to be. And usually it's not going to be pleasant. If I have to sit and think about myself and what I think about myself, I'm probably not going to be happy if I'm living in that kind of a realm, that pain body experience. Because the pain body mind is going to keep creating scenarios that are going to create pain. So what else do I have to look at but more pain and more beliefs of that will create more pain? He says the pain body, which is a dark shadow cast by the ego, is actually afraid of the light of your consciousness. It is afraid of being found out. Its survival depends on your unconscious identification with it, as well as your unconscious fear of facing the pain that lives in you. There's an acronym for fear many of you may know. It's forget everything and run. Now, other people use different words for the first letter, F. And you can say forget everything and run. Or you can face everything and recover. And there are other acronyms. However, most people don't want to face it. They don't want to bring the light of consciousness out. And in some respects, it's going to hurt. Unfortunately. And if we can only get past the initial pain, it's like being in the dark for a long time. And all of a sudden, somebody turns the light on. What happens? Your eyes hurt. In fact, your brain hurts. It's like, oh my goodness. Turn off that light. But if we allow the light to be on for just a few moments, we'll be accustomed to the light. We'll get used to the light. We'll welcome the light. We can see that, whoa, there's a whole new world. I can do some things now. And I can really be in the stillness, in the light. There have been so many studies of light deprivation. People actually do go insane when they're in the darkness for any long periods of time. Some not so long, some longer than others. But pretty much at some point, you know, we are going to lose our senses, especially if we're accustomed to the light. You know, you think about a fetus which has not seen the light. They're quite comfortable in their dark realm. They're being fed. They have everything they need. And that fetus is just growing, and it's comfortable, and it's moving around, and it's swimming about in its own private pool. And there's something within it that knows eventually, you know, it's going to come out. And who knows, maybe it can actually perceive some light through the womb. It can feel temperature probably to some degree. So it knows there's something else out there, but it has yet to experience the light. But once we get out, we want the light. Think about in childhood. You want to go to sleep with the light on. Afraid of the dark. Leave the light on. We welcome the light. We want the light. We cherish the light. We need the light. And then when we get a certain measure of enlightenment, we recognize that we are the light. I am not my body. I am not my thinking brain, mind. I'm so much more than that. I am the light. We are the light. There's only one light. There's only one light. There's only one life. There's only one mind, one true capital M mind, consciousness. And it's our job to be comfortable in that, to allow the light of day to dispel the shadows, to dispel the darkness, to dispel the darkness of obsessive thinking. He says, once the pain body has taken you over, you want more pain. You become a victim or a perpetrator. You want to inflict pain, or you want to suffer pain, or both. Like I said, hurt people. That's what they know. They experienced it, and that's what they dish out. It says you will find that your thinking and behavior, and this is page 31, are designed to keep the pain going for yourself and others. If you were truly conscious of it, the pattern would dissolve. For to want more pain is insanity, and nobody is consciously insane. So, we're going to move on. It says the pain body consists of trapped life energy. It has split off from your total energy field. It's like anti-life, like an animal trying to devour its own tail. Except it doesn't. It just seems to want you to suffer, because here I come to save the day. I am the ego. Even though I created the pain, I'm here to make it look like I'm freeing you up from the pain. I'm here to free you up. And in doing so, continues to create more of the same. So, it also goes on to say, when you start to disidentify and become the watcher, the pain body will continue to operate for a while and trick you into identifying with it again. In 12-step realm, that is Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, Any Anonymous, one of the most difficult things is to know when your ego is not taking you over. Because as a person progresses in their recovery from a substance or an activity, if it's shopping or hand washing or eating or smoking or anything, it's very difficult. Because as the person grows in their recovery, they become more clever. Well, guess what? The ego still can use that cleverness as well. It's said that you have to be vigilant in your recovery, meaning don't think that you've got it licked. Because the moment that you do, it's got you. The moment that you think there's no problem, all of a sudden, there it is. So usually in the first year or first 5 years, people are really cautioned to easy does it. You know, there's an upside down think sign. The think sign is upside down, and it's upside down for a reason, because usually people, anybody, not just substance abusers or addicts, alcoholics, many people's thoughts, thinking, is somewhat upside down. It's skewed. It's only going to be from a certain perspective. Usually it's self-centered, what I want, what I need, what I think I want, what I think I need. And everything that happens is going to participate in me getting what I think I want and what I think I need. And so somebody who's recovering, in recovery, or sobriety, doesn't necessarily know what the best is for them. So, it says you need to be present enough to be able to watch the pain body directly and feel its energy. It then cannot control your thinking. The moment your thinking is aligned with the energy field of the pain body, you are identified with it and again feeding it with your thoughts. So we're moving to chapter 3, moving deeply into the now. And as you move deeply into the now, of course, you're moving away from the pain body mind experience. He says, don't seek yourself in the mind. He says, the ego's needs are endless. It feels vulnerable and threatened, and so lives in a state of fear and want. He says, so when you recognize, once you recognize the root of unconsciousness, this is on page 40 in chapter 3 in the hardcover of The Power of Now. So once you recognize the root of unconsciousness as identification with the mind, which of course includes the emotions, you step out of it. You become present. When you are present, you can allow the mind to be as it is without getting entangled in it. The mind in itself is not dysfunctional. It's a wonderful tool. Dysfunction sets in when you seek yourself in it and mistake it for who you are. It then becomes an egoic mind and takes over your whole life. And I think that statement is one of the most powerful statements that he makes throughout this book. There's nothing wrong with your mind. The only issue is when you begin to think that you are your mind. When you think that, oh, myself, this is who I am, my mind. It's like I think, therefore I am. And that is my whole self. It's because I think, and I'm thinking with this brain, with this mind. No, that's not the truth of who we are. And that becomes the issue. And that's when the ego gets to take over. Ha-ha, I pulled the wool over your eyes. You have identified yourself with this thinking matter. And it is the ego whose job it is to get things done, to make things happen, in the past, you know, to identify with the past and put a lot of stock in the future, then you have lost yourself. Have you heard that? You've lost yourself. Sometimes they say you've lost your mind. Have you lost your mind? Well, yeah. That's what happens when we misidentify ourselves with our thinking. That's why that think sign is upside down. And it's upside down so that you get to pay attention. So it says, end the delusion of time. He says, time and mind are inseparable. Remove time from the mind and it stops, unless you choose to use it. To be identified with your mind is to be trapped in time. He says to do so creates an endless preoccupation with past and future and an unwillingness to honor and acknowledge the present moment and allow it to be. The compulsion arises because the past gives you an identity and the future holds the promise of salvation, of fulfillment in whatever form. Both are illusions. The past is gone. The future hasn't happened. They are illusions. So he says, time is an illusion. He says, nothing exists outside of the now. You haven't yet grasped the essence because you're trying to understand it mentally. The mind cannot understand this. Only you, your true self, can understand. What he's saying is, when you remember the past, you reactivate a memory trace in what we call the now. He says the future is an imagined now, a projection of the mind. So when the future comes, it comes as the now. So when you think about the future, you do it now. Past and future obviously have no reality of their own. Just as a moon has no light of its own, but can only reflect the light of the sun, so are the past and future only pale reflections of the light, power, and reality of the eternal present. Their reality is borrowed from the now. So we're going to move to the next chapter, The Loss of Now, The Core Delusion. And we're going to briefly stop here. He says, dissolving ordinary unconsciousness. Make it a habit to monitor your emotional mental state self-observation. Ask yourself, am I at ease in this moment? This is on page 64. Am I at ease in this moment is a good question to ask yourself frequently. Well, what's going on inside me at this moment? And this kind of gets you to be in the now, to be present. What do you feel? Direct your attention into the body. Is there any tension? Is there a low level of unease? These are ways that you can get yourself back into the present moment. It says freedom from unhappiness. You want to be free from unhappiness. Anything that is done with negative energy will become contaminated by it, and in time gives rise to more pain, more unhappiness. Furthermore, any negative inner state is contagious. Unhappiness spreads more easily than a physical disease. So are you polluting the world or cleaning up the mess? You are responsible for your inner space. Nobody else is, just you. Yes, you are as responsible for the planet. As within, so without. If humans clear inner pollution, they will also cease to create outer pollution. So drop the negativity. He says there is an inner purpose of your life's journey. And this is in mind strategies for avoiding the now. On page 73. He says, your life's journey has an outer purpose and an inner purpose. The outer purpose is to arrive at your goal or destination, to accomplish what you set out to do. Since the outer purpose belongs to the horizontal dimension of space and time, the inner purpose concerns a deepening of your being in the vertical dimension of the timeless now. The past cannot survive in your presence. Because there is no need to investigate the unconscious past in you except as it manifests at this moment as a thought, an emotion, a desire, a reaction. You may think that you need more time to understand the past or become free of it. In other words, that the future will eventually free you of the past. This is a delusion. Only the present can free you of the past. More time cannot free you of time. Access the power of now. That is the key. And so he says, the mind strategies for avoiding the now on page 75, what is the power of now? He says, and the answer is, give attention to the present. Give attention to your behavior, to your reactions, moods, thoughts, emotions, fears, and desires as they occur in the present. None other than the power of your presence, your consciousness, liberated from thought forms. The power of now is the power of your presence. It is your consciousness liberated from thought forms. That is the power of now. Chapter 5 is the state of presence. It says, inhabit your body fully. Always have some of your attention in the inner energy field of your body. It says beauty arises in the stillness of your presence. Whenever and wherever there is beauty, this inner essence shines through somehow. It only reveals itself to you when you are present. realizing pure consciousness. He says, what is pure consciousness? He says, everything that exists has being, has God essence, has some degree of consciousness. Everything is alive. The sun, the earth, plants, animals, humans are all expressions of consciousness in varying degrees, consciousness manifesting as form. What is consciousness? Everything. He says, even a stone has rudimentary consciousness, otherwise it would not be, and its atoms and molecules would disperse. So everything is made of something which is from consciousness. That something, atoms and molecules, are in everything that has form. So therefore, everything has some part of consciousness. So, we're going to move into the next part. It says, your inner body, and forgive yourself. He says, unless you stay present, and inhabiting your body is always an essential aspect of it, you will continue to be run by your mind. That's on page 98. He says, you will continue to be run by your mind. The script in your head that you learned a long time ago, the conditioning of your mind, will dictate your thinking and your behavior. You may be free of it for brief intervals, but rarely for long. This is especially true when something, in quotes, goes wrong, or there is some loss or upset. And when challenges come up, it says, focus as much as you can on the inner energy field of your body. Be still. Become present. And you are withdrawing consciousness from the mind. It says, forgive before you enter your inner body. The moment you truly forgive, on page 100, you have reclaimed your power from the mind. Non-forgiveness is the very nature of the mind. Just as a mind-made false self, the ego, cannot survive without strife and conflict. The mind cannot forgive. Only you can. You become present. You enter your body. You feel the vibrant peace and stillness that emanate from being. That is why Jesus said, before you enter the temple, forgive. Presence is pure consciousness. Consciousness that has been reclaimed from the mind, from the world of form. The inner body is your link with the unmanifested. In its deepest aspect is the unmanifested, the source from which consciousness emanates, as light emanates from the sun. Awareness of the inner body is consciousness remembering its origin and returning to its source. We're now going to take a quick look at Chapter 8, in which it says, enter the now from wherever you are, and this has to do with enlightened relationships. And this was, we spent a lot of time in this chapter, and we're not going to do that right now, but I think one of the most important things that I liked in this chapter talked about relationships as spiritual practice. Many of you may have heard that it said about relationships, the best way to find out about yourself is to enter into a relationship. Now, that also means that the best way to grow is to enter into a relationship. And if you think about it, if you're on an island by yourself with no interaction, no relationship with anybody, how are you going to find out about yourself? you only have you and your own thoughts and your own experiences. Well, it has been said, no man is an island, no man stands alone. But we can't do much alone. You can look around, wherever you are right now in the moment, look around your space, look around your room or your car or wherever you are, and identify as many things as you can that you made with your hands. Maybe you're in the kitchen. Did you grow the food? Did you make the seeds that created a plant? What is your experience with everything in your perception, in your view? If you didn't do it, then somebody else did. And therefore, you realize you are not alone. You already have a relationship with the world. But let's talk about maybe deeper relationships, interpersonal relationships, personal relationships. He says, one of the things that I do like, he says, you do not need to wait for the world to become sane or for somebody else to become conscious before you can be enlightened. You may wait forever. Says, do not, just a moment, I just lost my page. So he says, the pain body experience can take you over in relationships. He says, love cannot flourish unless you are permanently free of mind identification and your presence is intense enough to have dissolved the pain body, or at least you remain present as a watcher. And this is important because true communication is communion, he says on page 130, the realization of oneness, which is love. Usually this is quickly lost again unless you are able to stay present enough to keep out the mind and its old patterns. Now, what happens a lot in relationships is we mirror each other's pain. He says, instead of mirroring to each other your pain and your unconsciousness, instead of satisfying your mutual addictive ego needs, you will reflect back to each other the love that you feel deep within, the love that comes with the realization of your oneness with all that is. This is a love that has no opposite. And I think that's really important. You're removing the pain body and the identification with mind, and you will experience the bliss of a flowering relationship. No longer hurting each other. Hurt people. That's mirroring to each other your pain and your unconsciousness. When we can drop that and we cannot identify, no longer identify with the ego, that is when love, true love, has no opposite. What we're going to do now is go back into Chapter 9. Beyond happiness and unhappiness, there is peace. He says, the world as it appears to us now is largely a reflection of the egoic mind, fear being an unavoidable consequence of egoic delusion. It is a world dominated by fear. This is page 166. says fear being an unavoidable consequence of egoic delusion, it is a world dominated by fear. He says we are not separate from our world. So when the majority of humans become free of egoic delusion, this interchange will affect all of creation. Now, the Buddhists do have a saying that says that every tree and every blade of grass will eventually become enlightened. He says, according to St. Paul, the whole of creation is waiting for humans to become enlightened. And I certainly have read that when one person becomes enlightened, we all become enlightened. What that means is that in that moment, when one gets it, we all get it. And to me, that's very powerful, because that really points to oneness, that there really is one mind, and that that one mind achieves enlightenment. It will be an immediate ripple effect, and we all will get it. So until it's 100% enlightenment, none of us will get it. We're going to take just a quick break right now. I'd like you to just listen to a little tune by Melissa Phillips called There Is Only Love. We'll listen to a little bit of that. We'll
Krishna, Isis, Mandela, Sophia, Mohammed, Yahweh, Sai Baba, La Virgen, Maria, Wakantanka, Ramana.
Silence, freedom, detachment, devotion, wisdom, surrender, salvation, compassion. Sacred oneness, abundance, the truth remains only love. Jesus, Buddha, Kali, Krishna, Isis, Mandela,
Yes. That is Holy, From Here to Here. And before that, from what we could hear, is There Was Only Love by Melissa Phillips. All there is love. So, welcome back to Power of Now. We're in Chapter 9, Beyond Happiness and Unhappiness, There Is Peace. My name is Rodney Gittins, and I'm the host, the co-host, solo tonight. And we are in Chapter 9. So Chapter 9 is Beyond Happiness and Unhappiness, There Is Peace. The higher good beyond good and bad. He says happiness depends on conditions being perceived as positive. Inner peace does not. Inner peace is what we also call joy. Is what I call joy. So a question comes up where he says, can I pretend that if something happens, illness, accident, pain, some kind of death, can I pretend that it isn't bad, but the fact remains that it is bad, so why deny it? Eckhart Tolle responds, this is on page 148, 148, you are not pretending anything. You are allowing it to be as it is, that's all. This allowing to be takes you beyond the mind with its resistance patterns that create positive, negative polarities. It is an essential aspect of forgiveness. Forgiveness of the present is even more important than forgiveness of the past. If you forgive every moment, allow it to be as it is, then there will be no accumulation of resentment that needs to be forgiven at some later time. He says, remember, we're not talking about happiness here. He says, for example, when a loved one has just died or you feel your own death approaching, you cannot be happy. It is impossible. But you can be at peace. There may be sadness and tears. But provided that you have relinquished resistance, underneath the sadness you will find a deep serenity, a stillness, a sacred presence. This is the emanation of being. This is inner peace. The good that has no opposite. He talks about forgiveness again. He says, through forgiveness, and this is on page 149, last paragraph, through forgiveness, which essentially means recognizing the insubstantiality of the past and allowing the present moment to be as it is, the miracle of transformation happens not only within, but also without. A silent space of intense presence arises both in you and around you. Whoever or whatever enters that field of consciousness will be affected by it. He says, you dissolve discord, heal pain, dispel unconsciousness without doing anything, simply by being and holding that frequency of intense presence. That's one of those moments where you can just breathe it in. Just be intensely in the presence, in the forgiveness in the moment, in that sense of inner peace. You know it when you feel it. You'll know it when you see it. You know it. Where nothing happens, nothing has to happen. And you're okay with it. And hopefully that lasts for longer and longer moments. Now on page 150, it says the end of your life drama. It says most of the so-called bad things that happen in people's lives are due to unconsciousness. They are self-created, or rather ego-created. I sometimes refer to those things as drama. When you are fully conscious, drama does not come into your life anymore. Let me remind you briefly how the ego operates and how it creates drama. He says ego is the unobserved mind that runs your life when you are not present as the witnessing consciousness, the watcher. The basic ego patterns are designed to combat its own deep-seated fear and sense of lack. They are resistance, control, power, greed, defense, attack. Some of the ego's strategies are extremely clever, yet they never truly solve any of its problems, simply because the ego itself is the problem. You have heard, this is Rodney speaking, that you can't solve a problem from the level of that problem. Well, it's the same thing. You know, the ego really can't solve the problem because it is the problem. It is the level of the problem. So you can't use your ego and you can't use your thinking to solve the problem. And then when egos come together, whether in personal relationships or organizations or institutions, it says bad things happen sooner or later. Drama of one kind or another in a form of conflict, problems, power struggles, emotional or physical violence, and so on. This includes collective evils such as war, genocide, and exploitation, all due to massed unconsciousness, accumulated unconsciousness. He includes types of illnesses by the ego's continuous resistance, which creates restrictions and blockages in the flow of energy through the body. You know, and every time I read this sentence, and I've read it a few times, it reminds me of what a doctor of mine had told me, because I was experiencing arthritis in my hips. And he was saying that it's energy blockage. And I looked it up, and I actually saw that mirrored in many other in books. At any time there's stiffness of the joints or things of that nature, it's energy blockage. The flow of energy was not moving freely, and that there was some resistance. And I look at it now, and I mean, one of the areas of resistance I had was, how could this be happening to me? I consider myself a very good athlete. How could this be happening to me? This can't be happening. And it was difficult for me to do the things that I needed to do to heal something that I didn't want to believe was happening to me in the first place. Of course it was going to be difficult. Of course the ego was like, no, not you. You know, no, not me. This can't be happening to me. No, it's not. You know, we'll just ignore it. It'll go away. Because if it's happening to me, that means there's something wrong. And how could the ego allow something wrong to happen? So I certainly had created some drama around that. And that didn't cure anything either. So when I allowed myself moments of stillness, I was able to take care of it. I was able to do the best that I could in the moment, which was to have surgery and remove the diseased part or parts of my body, and I was no longer in pain and I was no longer suffering. And that had allowed me so many more moments of inner peace and joy, I have to tell you. Even now when I think about it, I still remember the pain. When I focus on the past, guess what? I remember the pain like it was yesterday or even now. Isn't that interesting how that happens? And you think about people in your life who continue to have drama in their life because they keep reliving the past, and what happens? They feel the pain as though it's happening right now. And that's how the ego, da-da-da-da, comes in to save the day, and you just have continual compulsive, obsessive-compulsive thoughts about the pain and how the future is going to relieve the pain. So it's a vicious cycle all over again. We have to focus on the now. Not allow the ego to run your life. End the drama. Live in complete acceptance of what is. This is on page 151, middle of the page, in the hardcover. When you live in complete acceptance of what is, that is the end of all drama in your life. Nobody can even have an argument with you, no matter how hard he or she tries. You cannot have an argument with a fully conscious person. So if you think about it in your own life, the times when you just resigned yourself, you know, I'm not going to argue with this person. And the moment you stop, it pretty much stops. They'll continue for a little while, but eventually they'll stop because there's no pain body trying to come back and share more pain. You've removed yourself from the pain body experience. You're in the stillness in the present moment, and the ego can exist, cannot exist in that moment. And in that moment, we are free. We have afforded ourselves great freedom. So this is Chapter 9, the end of your life drama. We're going to pick up with Chapter 9 again, and we're going to close out Chapter 9 in our next session next week. So this is One Love Center Presents. One Love Center is a wonderful, wonderful place to be. We are a place where love grows. We actually meet in person, so you can share love growing. We meet at the Village at Gareje, which is a great space. It's an art cafe space. It is a community space where people come together. They have their own projects. It's also a gallery space. It's a place where you can find sketching. You can find drama and art and music. So many great activities. And this is where One Love Center meets. And the address is 886 Pacific Street in Brooklyn, New York, between Washington Avenue and Underhill Avenue. It's considered Prospect Heights. We meet on Sundays, the first and third Sunday of the month, at 11:30 a.m. All are welcome. You are welcome. I am the spiritual director, and the assistant spiritual director is Reverend Hajar Rahim. We are a place where love grows. We are a lovingly created community, a fellowship, meditation, prayer, sacred service. We have and offer spiritually supported healing service. We have spiritual speakers, musical transformances, and those are transformational performances. We have study workshops and spiritual films. So please feel free to contact us. Feel free to celebrate life with us. It is our mission to provide a stable and welcoming community for all who choose to practice and grow, to play and unfold their understanding of spiritual principle and spiritual living. And it is our vision to see the world as a sacred environment where spiritual growth and development flourish through living in the practice of spiritual principles. This is One Love Center, Centers for Spiritual Living. We are a teaching chapter. Thank you so much for participating, for your listening. We know that with One Love Center, with spiritual principles, with spiritual living, that all good things are possible. We know and truly believe that you can change your thinking and change your life. And if you would like to contribute, please contact us. You can email us at onelove@onelovecenter.org. One love, that's O-N-E-L-O-V-E, at onelovecenter.org. We welcome your tax-deductible donations. That helps us to continue in our mission of unfolding spiritual principles and spiritual living in each of our lives. And so I thank you once again. And as we close out, we hear a wonderful tune by on an album called Rossimello. It's called Guide Me, God. This is One Love Center presents The Power of Now Book Study. Peace and blessings to you and yours. I'd like to thank all of our listeners and contributors. Thank you for your text messages. Peace and blessings.
Guide me.